Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Chaf Dalet. Today's daf has been sponsored by Mr. Soli Asa in honor of the rabbi. Tiskele Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied by Elul Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael ben Miriam and Abraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. In our previous daf, we learned about a takana that was made by Nehemiah. Nehemiah, in his time in Jerusalem, there was rampant Chilul Shabbat. The Gemara actually substantiated that from a pasuk in Nehemiah, Perek Yud Gimal, pasuk Tedvav, that talked about how the Jews were brazenly Mehalel Shabbat, and then the rabbis instituted the laws of Mukseh in a very extreme manner. And they actually forbade practically all vessels except for three vessels that they deemed necessary. And then the Gemara went on to teach us how, as the people became more observant, they loosened up their restrictions on Mukseh, and they became a little more lenient. Now, our Gemara, today we begin on Kuf Chav Gimal Amud Bet, and we start four lines from the bottom. Ama Rabbi El-Azhar. Rabbi El-Azhar taught, Kanin umaklot glustera umeducha kulan kodem hatarat kelim nishnu. Gemara now is going to list four different vessels, four different type of items. The first one being called kanim, which is literally poles. Maklot would be sticks. Glustera, we'll see, is a type of lock. Umeducha is the mortar. So the Gemara is going to tell us that these four items are indeed mukseh on Shabbat. However, they were mukseh because this was before the rabbis loosened up their heter, meaning these things were asud only because they were the Gezerah was made at the time of Nehemiah, but subsequently when the restrictions loosened up, so these items then reverted back to becoming permissible. So the Gemara is telling us the name of Rabbi El-Azhar, a very important fact that you should know. These items that it says in the Mishnayot that we're going to read are forbidden, are mukseh, it's only because it was before they started to loosen up the restrictions. And the Gemara says, Kinin or Kanin, the poles, what is this referring to? Ditnan, we have a Mishnah. Lo Sidura Kanin, Velo Nitilatan, Dohe et HaShabbat. Not the setting up the poles and not taking away the poles is Dohe Shabbat. What are these poles? This is referring to the Lechem HaPanim. We know that in Beit HaMikdash they used to have a Shulchan, and on the Shulchan, the table, they used to set 12 loaves of bread from Shabbat to Shabbat. They used to take the 12 loaves of Shabbat off the table, and then they used to refill it with 12 new loaves. It was done from Shabbat to Shabbat. Now, in order that the loaves do not rest on each other, because that would cause them to get moldy, so what they would do is they would insert poles into the Shulchan in order to create like shelves and airspace in between the loaves of bread. So the Mishnah teaches us that these poles are indeed mukseh. And therefore what they used to do is on Friday they used to take the poles out of the Shulchan, and then you had the 12 loaves resting on each other. Shabbat, they would take those 12 loaves off, divide them amongst the Kohanim, and then they would put the 12 new loaves on, and they were resting on each other. And then after Shabbat, they would take the poles and fasten them in and place them on the respective shelves. Now, these poles technically are a kelisha melachto leheter. It's a vessel that's primary function is for heter, because all it serves is as a shelf. And still, the Mishnah tells us that you weren't allowed to handle these poles on Shabbat. As the Mishnah taught, and I read again, Lo Sidur HaKanim, you aren't allowed to set up these poles on Shabbat. Velo Netilatan, nor were you allowed to remove them
on Shabbat. So the Bir Azad taught us that that was only in the beginning of Nehemiah's Gezerah. But after Nehemiah's Gezerah became a little more lenient, then these poles eventually became permissible again, because they are Kedish Menachto Neheter. The next case is Maklot. Literally means a makir, is like a stick. Ditnan, because we learned in the Mishnah. Maklot, dakin, you had thin sticks, halakin, that were smooth, ayusham. They were there by the Beit HaMikdash. Umaniho al ketefo va'al ketef habero, and they would place the sticks on each other's shoulders, meaning two men would stand side by side, place a stick in between them, so the stick was resting on both their shoulders. Vetolen, they would hang the Korban Pesach from the stick, umafshit, and that's the way they used to skin the animal. You see, most of the people would have, let's say, a hook on the wall. They would stick the animal on the hook and they would skin the animal that way, but there was not enough space for everybody. So then everybody would take whoever didn't have enough space, they would take a stick and they would place it on, you know, shoulder to shoulder, put the animal in between, and they would skin it. But that was only when Erev Pesach fell out during the week. Rabbi Elazar said, Arba'a shechal yot b'Shabbat. But let's say Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbat, maniach yado al katef chavero, v'yad chavero al ketefo, v'tole u'mavshit. So he says what they would do was, they would take their hand and they would place it on their friend's shoulder, and the other guy would place his hand across his friend's shoulder. They would form a bar, so to speak, of hand, right? They would place the animal on their hands and they would skin it that way, implying that they weren't allowed to use the sticks on Shabbat. Now, even though the sticks, technically, it's permissible to skin the animal, there's no reason why you shouldn't be allowed to use the sticks. Technically, it's a klisha menachto, they're dead. And still, you see what? They held it was mukseh. So therefore, obviously, this Mishnah was also when Nehemiah's Gezerah was enacted, but after the Gezerah lightened up, so these sticks eventually became permissible again. The next case is glustera. Glustera, as we explained, was a type of lock that they used to use in the olden days. They used to have by the doorpost, let's say in the ground, by the threshold, a hole, and they would place this beam, let's say, in the ground. It would serve as a lock. Now the Gemara is going to tell us that the top of these locks, these poles, actually had like a, I would say, like a thick ball on top, that they were also being able to be used as a crusher. You're able to use to crush things with these things. The only reason why the Gemara says we're talking about such a case is because otherwise it's not even considered a keli. It's not even considered a vessel. Just to be a pole that uses a lock and a piece of wood or metal, whatever it was made out of, is not considered a keli. So we're talking about a glustera. That's a lock that had on top of it, let's say, a thick ball that could also have been used as a crusher. But the point is, the Gemara says, glustera ditna, we have a Mishnah. Nagar or neger, which would be a log, sheyesh berosho glustera, that has on top of it this round or thick part of it, which makes it a keli, and they would use it to lock the doors. Rabbi Yeshua says, shomta min petach zeh, v'tole b'chaberu b'shabbat. If you want to change the lock, meaning you want to take the lock off this door and move it to a different door, he says you're not allowed to handle it directly. You have to drag it. Shomtos to drag it, meaning these locks used to have, let's say, a string attached to them. So he says you cannot handle them directly. You can move it with the string and drag it across to the next door. So right away you see, according to Rabbi Yoshua, he holds that these items are mukseh. Even though technically the reklishim and achtol le'eter, a lock is not a forbidden item, and still he held it was mukseh. So obviously this was in the times of Nehemiah's Gezerah. Now Rabbi Tarfon was a little more lenient on these things, and he said, Hareu kechol akelim umetaltel b'chaser. He says, no, these items are like every other item, it's permissible, and you can actually move them so long as you're in a gated area, let's say a chaser, a courtyard, which is permissible to carry on Shabbat. So that is Rabbi Tarfon's opinion. But for our purposes, Rabbi Yeshua did hold, it is mukseh. Meducha, now we go to the mortar that we mentioned on the previous daf, and we learned earlier that the meducha is mukseh. Right? We said the only time you can move a medocha was when there's a piece of garlic in it. Then it's permissible. If there's no garlic in it, so then we said it is mukseh. Now, in the earlier daf, we actually learned that when we said it's mukseh mehama lesel, we said. That it's mukseh to move from, let's say, the sun into the shade. But for tzorek gufo or tzorek mekomo, the Gemara wanted to say it would be permissible. However, at this point, the Gemara is falling off that. The Gemara is saying, you know why the medocha is forbidden to move it? Because it was talking about in the times of Nehemiah, when they had strict rules of mukseh. That's the way we understand it at this point over here. Therefore, really, the medocha, after the restrictions were lightened, the medocha would become permissible, like a klishe melachto leheter. However, when we say medocha is asur, this was because it was at the time. So we listed four different vessels. Let's review them. The four vessels were the kanim, that was the sticks that they used to use for the Beit HaMikdash, the Shulchan. They used to insert them to make the shelves. We talked about the maklot. Those were the sticks that they used to use to skin the Korban Pesach. We talked about the glustera. Those were the locks. And we talked about the medocha, the mortar. All items are mukseh. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Rabba said, Mimai. Now all this so far was said by, who's talking? This is the name of Rabbi Elazar. Right? Rabba comes and says, no. Mimai, who told you? Dilma le'olam emalach le'achar hatarat kelim nishnu. Maybe I'll tell you that these items are mukseh even after the rabbi started to be lenient on the laws of mukseh, which is maybe these items are still mukseh today. Why should they be mukseh? Kanim, the reason why the poles in the shulchan should be mukseh, tama mai. What's the reason why they inserted these poles in the first place? Mishumi arpushe. Because they were concerned about spoilage. They were concerned about mold. If the breads are going to rest on top of each other, so they're going to be concerned that they might become moldy. That's why they would put these shelving in order to give some air in between the loaves of bread. Behai purta, in this small amount of time, lo me'apesh, meaning how long were the breads going to be of touching each other? Well, Friday they would take the poles out. So you have from Friday night to Shabbat afternoon, and then you have the new loaves of bread that they put on from Shabbat afternoon to Motzei Shabbat. In that small amount of time, the bread is not going to become moldy. So I can really tell you, these poles are still mukseh, because there's really no purpose for them to be used on Shabbat, even though now we're lenient, let's say, on the laws of mukseh, but there's no function for these items. What are you worried about? To make shelves so they don't spoil? We're not worried about spoilage in such a short amount of time. Therefore, they can still be mukseh. That's the way Rabbah wants to learn. Now, maklot, the reason why those sticks or poles we said on Erev Pesach Shehaliot B'Shabbat, you know why you can't use them? If Shar Kerebi El-Azhar. Because you have the option of Nabi El-Azhar that said you could put your hands on each other like we said, shoulder to shoulder, your hands across, and use that. So why should we allow you to use a makel when you have an option not to use it at all? So therefore, really, I'll tell you, it's after the leniencies of mukseh were lifted, after the stringencies of mukseh were lifted, but still this item remains mukseh because you have another option. Glustera, regarding the glustera, the lock, you know why the lock is mukseh? Kidrabiyanai. Because we were talking about a specific case. The lock was in a door that was in a courtyard that they did not make an eruv in the courtyard. Now we learned that although biblically you're allowed to carry in a courtyard, let's review what a courtyard is. You have a courtyard, there's homes in the courtyard itself. Now from the Torah, you're allowed to carry in this courtyard because it's really a private domain. However, the rabbis demanded that you make an eruv in order that all the dwellers are considered unified to carry in the chatzir. The halakha says, if you don't have an eruv, you're not allowed to carry, not from the house to the courtyard, or from the courtyard, let's say, to the house. Unless there is a leniency, if there were items that were in the courtyard from before Shabbat, even though there is no Eruv, it is permissible to move those items from the courtyard to one of the houses. Only on new items, let's say taking from the house, or let's say there was an item that was not in the courtyard before Shabbat, you cannot take that into the house. But something that was in the courtyard itself, mutar. Now we get to the subject of the lock. You have the chatzer, it's not me'orevet. You have the door, the lock is in the threshold of the door, right? Rabbi Yeshua sabar, Rabbi Yeshua, who said you can only drag the lock, sabar, tocha petach kelifnim dameh. He says, now all the whole controversy. The lock, where do you consider it? The lock is by the threshold of the door. Is the threshold of the door considered in the chatzer, or is considered in the house? But Rabbi Yeshua says, kidifnim dameh. It's as if it's in the house. Now if it's in the house, you can't move it to a different door, because you're taking from the house into the chatzer. And if you're going to let you carry it directly, you're going to carry something from the house into the chatzer, which does not have an eruv, which is going to be forbidden. Therefore he's lenient that what? We're not going to allow you to directly move it, but we'll let you drag it. Which means, he lets you take it indirectly. Remember we said that there's a string attached to these locks, a rope, so let you drag it across. Now, of course, that's a leniency, even though, let's say, normally you're not allowed to carry things from the house into the chaser, and he considers this in the house, but he was lenient for the lock to drag it. The Rabbi Tarfon holds, Savar tocha petach kelachutz dameh. He says, no, that the threshold of the house is considered as part of the chaser. And therefore, umana de chaser b'chaser kamitaltel. And therefore, you're just moving something that was in the chaser already. And therefore, it is permissible to move it from the chaser, and you can move it to another door in the chaser, because it's considered from chaser to chaser. So that is the opinion. Now, I should point out again, just to be a little more clearer, items in the chatzer, you're only allowed to carry in the chatzer, within the chatzer. You cannot, things that were in the chatzer from before Shabbat, not from the chatzer into the house. So therefore, again, Rabbi Tarfon says, fine, this item already is considered in the chatzer, because the threshold is considered in the chatzer, so to move it from one threshold in the chatzer to a different threshold, mutar, that's the mahalokin, right? Now we go to the fourth case, meducha, Rabbi Nehemyahi. And that which you told me that the meduchas mukseh, I'll tell you why. It's after the leniencies of mukseh. And really, according to everybody, a meduchah should not be mukseh. But that statement that said meduchah is mukseh, that's of Nehemiah. If you remember, Rav Nehemiah's shita was that a keli you can only use for its designated purpose, which means even, let's say, a ladle. He says you can't use a ladle for anything else except for scooping out the vegetables or soup. Or you can't use a talet for anything but wearing it. And therefore the Nehemiah has a very strict understanding. And therefore a meducha, what's the primary purpose of a meducha? To crush things in it. Now obviously, since you can't crush on Shabbat, so therefore the meducha for him becomes totally mukseh. That's even after they were lenient on the laws of mukseh, but the Hamiyah still maintained a strict opinion. So therefore we have a mahlokit between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbah, how to learn these four. Rabbi Elazar says these four are only asur because they were made at the time of the Hamiyah's restrictions. But then after that, these became permissible. Rabbah says no, even after they lightened up on the restrictions, these four still have Isur, as Rabbi explained each case. So now we start the new Mishnah. Kol hakelim nitalim letzorech v'shelo letzorech. All vessels can be moved on Shabbat letzorech for a purpose v'shelo letzorech and not for a purpose. Now of course these are vague terminologies. The Gemara is going to have to interpret to us what does letzorech mean and what is shelo letzorech. Rav Nehemiah Omer, Rav Nehemiah says, "En italin ela letzorech." So clearly, we see Rav Nehemiah's opinion: you can only move kelim for their purpose. Now, the Gemara is going to explain. Actually, there's going to be a very important machloket here between two Amoraim: Rabbah with a he and Rava with an aleph. Okay, this is going to be the classic machloket in the laws of mukseh. And the Gemara says, "Mai letzorech umai shelo letzorech." Well, what does this mean when you said kol hakelim nitalim ben letzorech ben shelo letzorech? What do these terminologies mean? Amar Rabbah.
So Rabba said, Litzorech, when it says that you can carry them for a purpose, it's talking about davar shemelachto leheter, talking about a vessel that's primary function is mutar, right? Litzorech gufo, using it for its purpose, like a spoon using it to eat. Right, that would be litzorech. Shelo litzorech. Who is lo litzorech? Davar shemelachto leheter litzorech mekomo. It's coming to tell you that what? That if you have, let's say, a klishma toilet, like a spoon, like I just told you, you'd be allowed to move it shelo letzorech. Lo letzorech means you're not moving it for its function, but you're moving because you need the space. So he's calling sorech mekomo because you need the space shelo letzorech. Meaning, it's not for the purpose of the keli itself, but you need what's underneath. You need the space underneath. So that's the first case, right? Vedavar shemelachto leisur. Oh, but a vessel that's primary function is isur, let's say for example a hammer, letzorech gufo in, you can only use it for its function, meaning to bang things, let's say like we said, crack open nuts, letzorech mekomo lo. But you cannot move it letzorech mekomo at all. So again, Rabba's opinion is, klish melachto leheter mutar, ben letzorech gufo, ben letzorech mekomo. Klish melachton isur, only the sorek gufo, but if you need the space, sorek mekomo, no. Now, the atar of Nehemiah lememar, now the Nehemiah comes and says, afilu davar shemelachton leheter, even an item that's primary function is for heter, like a spoon, letzorek gufo in, letzorek mekomo lo. You can only use it for its function, meaning, let's say, to eat with the spoon. But anything else, meaning a sorek mekomo, even, you cannot. So that's the way Rabba interprets our Mishnah. Amar le Rava. So Rava ben Aleph, he comes along and says, Letzorek mekomo shelo letzorek karitle. He says, when you interpreted the Mishnah, shelo letzorek, you called sorek mekomo, lo letzorek. Right, that's the way you define the Mishnah. When the Mishnah said, kol hakim nitalim ben letzorek, ben shelo letzorek. The way Rabba interpreted lo letzorek means you don't need the vessel itself, but you need the place. Rabba comes along and says, nah, when you say you need the place, that's considered tzorech as well. He says, I don't buy that interpretation that lo letzorech means tzorech mekomo. Meaning, a keli has two functions. Either you need the keli itself, or you need the space that the keli is occupying. That's also one of the functions of a keli, meaning not a function, but it occupies space. So therefore, that's also considered tzorech. I need the space that this keli is occupying. So therefore, he is going to redefine the Mishnah. And he's going to say, Ela amarava, letzorech, when the Mishnah said, all vessels can be moved letzorech, it means, davar shemelachto leheter. Right, like a spoon, primarily for it. Ben letzorech gufo, ben letzorech mekomo. That's both considered tzorech. Whether you need the item to use or the place. Shelo letzorech. And what does it mean? Shelo letzorech. Afilu mehama letzel. That if it's a klish shematon leheter, you can even move it from the sun into the shade. You don't need the item itself. You don't even need the space of the item. You just need to protect it from the elements. That's considered shelo letzorech. That would be permissible as well. Vedavar shematon leisur. But if the item is primarily used for isur, like a hammer, letzorech gufo veletzorech mekomo in. He's even lenient to use it not only for tzorech gufo, but even tzorech mekomo. Mehama letzel, lo. But from the shade, or from the sun to the shade, it'll be forbidden. V'atar of Nehemiah, the Lord of Nehemiah comes along and says, V'afilu davar shematon leheter, letzorech gufo veletzorech mekomo in. And if the Hayah comes along and says, no, you can only move a klishimatol yetel letzorech gufo and mekomo, but nothing else. So let's analyze ourselves the differences between Rabba and Rava.
Rav Nachman says you can't do this.
Right. In which case? Rav Nehemiah?
The last case.
Klishimatol leheter. That's a klishimatol leheter, right? A cup, a glass.
For no reason.
For no reason, no. Right, you need a gufo. Well, it sounds like all the opinions are only allowing and Sorek Mekomo. I want to point out that is actually the opinion of Harambam, and it is brought down in Shulchan Aruch, now that you're mentioning it, that even on a Klish Melechtol Le'eter, just to move it arbitrarily, nobody allows that. I mean, you need a Sorek, either to drink from it, or you need the space. But just to move vessels arbitrarily for no reason, we didn't see anybody, any shita in the Gemara, where even a klish merakto leter would be permissible. In any event, let's just review ourselves the differences between Rabbah and Nava. One major difference is a klish merakto leisur, whereas Rabbah comes along and says you can only move it netzorech gufo. Whereas Rava with an Aleph comes along and says Gufo and Mekomo. That's one important Hiluk. As well as in Eklisha Melachto Leheter, where Rava says you can only move it for Gufo and Mekomo, but not Mehama Letzel. You cannot move it from the sun to the shade. Rava, the second opinion, came along and said you can move it not only the Tzorek Gufo, not only the Tzorek Mekomo, you can also move it Mehama Letzel. There's also a mahlok in the way they interpreted the Nehemia. According to Rabbah with the hair, Rab Nehemia only allows the klish melakto leter letzore gufo. Whereas Rabbah comes along and says that Nehemia will say klish melakto leter is mutar ben letzore gufo, ben letzore mekomo bo. So you do have a very variant opinions. What is that?
Even to sit on the mortar according to Rabbah with the hay, that Nehemia would allow?
No. Rav Nehemia only is matir klish melachto leheter. Heter. But a klish melachto leisur, since the primary function is isur, so it doesn't stop. Okay? Now, the Gemara continues. Gemara says like this, and then that's a very important point to point out, that if going to Rav Nehemia, you can only use an item for its primary function. Now, that means you can only use things that are klish melachto leheter. Like a talet, or a spoon, but a hammer, you can't use it, because a hammer, its primary function is to, a blacksmith's hammer primary function is isur, and therefore he holds of Nehemia that since the primary function is isur, you can't use it. Therefore, Rav Nehemia holds it only, we're discussing a klish matol heter, and even a klish matol heter, only for what it's used for, a spoon only to eat with. But you can't use a spoon, let's say, for another permissible function, because that's not what it's made for. And a talet you can only use to wear. But you can't use it for anything else. No, it's heter. So the Nehemia, you have to remember, only allows klish menachton leheter letzorem. And a machloket between Rabbah and Rabbah was how much? Rabbah with the head said what? Sorech gufo only. And Rabbah with an aleph said sorech gufo and sorech mekomo. Yativ Rav Safra, V'Ravacha bar Huna, V'Ravuna bar Hanina. All the three rabbis were sitting. V'Yadveh v'Kam, they were sitting and they said, L'Rabbah alibad Rabbi Nehemia. Okay. Now they go, they're focusing on one opinion. Rabbah is the first rabbi. According to Rav Nehemia, that said, Klish melachto leheter only is permissible as sort of gufo. For example, plates. You can only use them to eat from them. Oh, hani ke'arot. These dishes, hechi metaltelinan, after you finish eating, how do you move them off the table? What are you going to tell me? Now, sorech gufo only means to eat from them. He doesn't allow sorech mekomo. So you're telling me what? That you have to sit with dirty dishes on the table for the rest of the Shabbat according to the way he understands in the Hamya? So Amar Dehu Rav Safra, so Rav Safra answered, it's not different than a bucket of feces, which means we learned that if you have something that's disgusting or repugnant, so that's called a graf shalei. It's a bucket of rei. Halakha says, once it's disgusting, they waive the mufsir issues, you can move it out. 30 plates after you finish eating are repugnant, and therefore it'd be permissible to move them off the table, even according to Rav Nehemia. Amar Abaye le Rabbah. Now, Abaye actually told this directly to Rabbah and said, Lemor, according to my master, Alibad Rabbi Nehemia, according to the way you interpret Rav Nehemia,
It's the same question. How do you move the ke'arot off the table? Amar le Rav Safra Havrin, Rav Safra, our friend, our colleague, Targemeh. He already interpreted it. Midi da'aba graf shel re'ai. That's the status of a graf shel re'ai. Comes the Gemara and continues, Eti be abaye le Rava. Now the Gemara asks a question, Abaye challenging Rabba. Meducha, we said by the mortar. Im yesh bashum, right? If it has garlic in it, metatalinota. Ve'im lav, en metatalinota. And if it doesn't have garlic, you can't move it. Now a meducha, the mortar is a klisha melachto le'isur. Right? Its primary function is used for grinding, right? And it's telling you if it doesn't have garlic in it, you can't move it. Now wait, according to Rava, he said that a klisha medachto liisur is permissible. Letzorech gufo and letzorech mekomo. So the only thing he didn't allow was mechama letzel. So the question he's asking over here is, here you're telling me you can't move it. Why can't you move it? According to you, a klisha medachto liisur, again, according to Rava, right? According to Rava with an aleph, right? That's the question he's asking on. According to him, what did Rava say above? He said that a klish melachto le'isur is letzorech gufo is permissible, letzorech mekomo lo. Right? He said only letzorech gufo, yes, and letzorech mekomo, no. So the Gemara asks, Eti be Abaye le Rava. Abaye asked the question to Rava. Rava's opinion was what? That a klisha melachto le'isur is permissible to move. Ben netzorech gufo, ben netzorech mekomo. So he asked him, meducha, if you have a mortar, which is a klisha melachto le'isur, im yesh bashum, if there's garlic in it, fine, because since the garlic is in it, you can move it with the garlic. Ve'im lav, if there's no garlic, meaning it's empty, you can't move it. Why can't you move it? According to you, klisha melachto le'isur is mutar, ben the gufo, ben the kamo. Gemara's answer, yeah, when it said you can't move it, it means you can't move it from the sun into the shade, consistent with Rava's opinion. We have another question, again on Rava with an aleph. The Shavin, both Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai agree, she'im kitzev alav basar. If let's say you have the Eli was the pestle, right, the pestle used for actual grinding. So we had a machloket, can you use that to cut meat on it on Yom Tov? Bet Shammai says you can't. Bet Hillel said for Simchat Yom Tov would be lenient for you to use it to cut meat. But both agree that after you finish cutting the meat on it, she'asur letaltelo. Now why should you be asur? It's a klisha melachto le'isur. Should be permissible gufo and mekomo. Kemara says hachanamehamaletzel. Same answer. That it's only asur to carry it, to move it from the sun to the shade, consistent with Rava's opinion. Ve'aditnan. Oh, but we have a mishnah. En sumchin et akedera bebakat. Bakat is a plank of wood. You're not allowed on Yom Tov to take a plank of wood and support the pot on it. It seems you want the pot to be elevated, so you can't take a plank, put it underneath and then put the pot on it. V'chein bedelet. Nor can you, let's say, keep the door open by taking a plank of wood and placing it, lodging it by the doors to support the door. So again, we're talking about Yom Tov. Now, v'habakat, this plank of wood, to be Yom Tov, which is a plank of wood on Yom Tov is permissible because you can use it to fuel a fire, and therefore it's, on Yom Tov it's not mukseh at all. So therefore the question would be Alma, implying that davash melachto leheter, that an item, even if its primary function is heter, ben letzorech gufo, ben letzorech mekomo, asur. It seems that over here, we're going to be forbidden for any other function. It's going to be asur. Because we're not allowing you on Yom Tov to use this item at all. You can't use it to support the kederah, and you can't use it to support the door. So therefore, now even though, of course, this item is not mukseh, why is it not mukseh? I told you, because it stands for fuel. Because you can throw it in the fire. So this is a question on all the opinions. Right?
that according to Rava, Naba, bottom line, we said a klishim of tone, eter is mutar ben netzorech gufo, ben netzorech mekomo. And here now you're telling me that I cannot use this bakalat on Yom Tov. The Gemara says, hold it. Hatam, my tama. You know what the reason why Yom Tov was stringent? Kevan de b'shabbat davash shemelachto le'isur. Because on Shabbat, are you allowed to move this plank of wood? Of course not. The plank of wood on Shabbat is considered a item that's primary function is Isur. Now, v'gezera yom tov atu Shabbat. So the Gemara says, Hadush over here. We're going to make a gezera that since it's forbidden on Shabbat, because it's a kli shemelachto le'isur, we're going to forbid it on Yom Tov, gezera atu Shabbat. So the Gemara says, hold it. V'chi tema Shabbat gufet tishtiri. What do you mean? Even on Shabbat it should be permissible to use this plank of wood to support your pot. Why? Deha davash shemelachto le'isur letzorek gufot tzorek mekomo shareh. Which means, we heard earlier that according to everybody, a kli shemelachto le'isur, to use it for a permissible function is okay. So what do you mean? Even on Shabbat, this plank of wood, you want to call it a kli shemelachto le'isur, fine. It still should be permissible to support my pot with it. So you're telling me, you know why it's a sur on Yom Tov? Gezerah to Shabbat. What do you mean? On Shabbat it's permissible. So the Gemara says, no. When do we say that a kli shemelachto le'isur is permissible at tzorek gufo? That's when it's considered a keli. That's when it's considered a vessel. Hecha deleka torat keli alav lo. But a plank of wood is not considered a keli. And therefore it's considered, it doesn't have the leniency of a klisha benachto l'yisur. It's not a keli. It's just a plank of wood. And therefore it's like mukseh mahmat gufo. It itself becomes intrinsically mukseh. And therefore let's review now how this is working. The plank on Yom Tov should have been permissible. Because on Yom Tov, this is a klisha menachto le'eter. You can use it to throw into the fire. So technically, I should be able to put it under my pot to support it by the door. But the rabbi said, you know what? Even though it should be permissible on Yom Tov, asur. Gezerah, that you might come to do it on Shabbat. And on Shabbat, it's forbidden. Because this is not a klisha menachto le'isur. It's not a keli. And therefore, be considered mukseh mahmat gufo, meaning intrinsically. And therefore, we make a gezerah Yom Tov to Shabbat. So the Gemara now asks, Umi gazdinan? Do we indeed make a gezerah on Yom Tov to Shabbat? Vehatenan, we have a Mishnah. Mashilin perot derech aruba biyom tov, aval lo b'Shabbat. Mishnah is talking about a case where a person, let's say, before Yom Tov, put some fruit on top of his roof in order to dry off. And that was customary practice in the olden days. And now the forecast was for rain on Yom Tov. Now he wants to bring the fruit into his house. Now, the issue over here is we don't want a person to exert himself, extra exertion on Yom Tov. So therefore we can allow him to bring them in his house, but in a way that is not so much of a torah. So what do they allow him to do? He can bring it through the arubah. The arubah is like the skylight. Let him open up the skylight. Instead of bringing it through the window, which is more Torah, let him just drop him down into the skylight to bring him into the house. However, even that is forbidden on Shabbat. Because we don't want you to do any extra exertion. Now, you see clearly, something is permissible on Yom Tov, even though it's forbidden on Shabbat. So this premise that, you know, we make gezerot from Yom Tov to Shabbat, here, you see, we don't make a gezerah. So now the Gemara goes the other way. Umi lo gazina? What, you don't think we make gezerot from Shabbat, Yom Tov to Shabbat? Dehat, and then we have another Mishnah that says, En ben Yom Tov le Shabbat, ela ochel nefesh bilbad. The only difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov is cooking. On Shabbat, you can't cook. On Yom Tov you can. But for everything else, all the halachot are the same. implying that it's permissible on Yom Tov to bring things down the skylight. On Shabbat, it's also permissible. So from this Mishnah, you see that the laws of Shabbat and Yom Tov are actually equal. So therefore, obviously, you see what? You see that if it's going to be asur on one day, so it's going to be asur on the other day. It's going to be asur on both. So that means like you just said. If it's going to be asur on Shabbat, then it's going to be asur on Yom Tov as well. I guess like you just said, in this case over here, if it's going to be asur to put the things in the skylight on Shabbat, it'll be forbidden as well on Yom Tov. Because in Ben, the only difference is between Shabbat and Yom Tov is what? The Ochel Nefesh. So make up your mind, the Gemara wants to know. Do you make Gezerot from Shabbat to Yom Tov or not? So the Gemara comes along and says... So the Gemara is going to come along and say it like this. Amar of Yosef. Rakasha. These two Mishnayot are not a question. Harabi Eliezer and Harabi Yoshua. One is going like Rabbi Eliezer and one is going to Rabbi Yoshua. Let's learn the Mahlokot of Rabbi Eliezer and Yoshua independently and then we'll apply it back to these Mishnayot. Netanya, we have a Braita. And actually we learned this case in last week's Daf. Netanya, oto ve'et beno. You have an animal and its child. Shenaflu nebor. It fell into the pit. Now we have a rule that says you're not allowed to slaughter a animal and its son on the same day. Now it fell into the pit, it's Yom Tov. So what does it do now? You have an issue here. You don't want the animals to remain in the pit. So what do? Rabbi Eliezer omer ma'ale tarishon al menat l'shuhato. Well, you can bring up one of the animals with intention to slaughter it. L'shuhato, you can actually slaughter it. V'asheni oseh lo panasa b'mkomo. And the animal that stays in the board, because you can't slaughter that one, right? So you just throw some food out into the board and sustain it over Yom Tov. B'shvir shelo yamut, so it doesn't die. Rabbi Yeshua omer, Rabbi Yeshua has a different trick you could do over here. Ma'aleh tarishon al menat l'shuhato. Bring up the first one with intent to slaughter it. De'en l'shuhato. But then when you look at it, you could say, you know what? It's not fat enough. I don't want to slaughter this one. I want the other one. U'ma'arim. You can make a subterfuge. U'ma'aleh tasheni. You can bring the second one up. Now, once you have both of them up, you can say, Ratzah zeh shohed. Now already you can decide which one you want to slaughter or not. So according to the B, Yeshua, he allows you to make a trick over it to get both of them out of the well. Now, let's apply this to our case. Obviously, you see the B, Yeshua holds that in a case over it where there might be financial loss, for example, you know, the animal in the well over there, we don't want it to stay in the well, so he allows you to bring it out. You're allowed to make extra toil on Yom Tov to bring out even the second animal through this trick, right? Through this harama. So he'll be the author of the Mishnah that says what? That you're allowed on Yom Tov to throw the fruit down the skylight, even though it's tidha, but we see for loss of money, he allows you to do tidha, right? And the other opinion that says on Yom Tov, it's going to be Asur, just like it's Asur on Shabbat, it's going to be Asur on Yom Tov, that'll be the Bili Ezer. Because you see, according to the Bili Ezer, in the case of financial loss, when the animal's in the pit, he does not allow you to do anything. So therefore, he'll say that what? Yom Tov as well, it's Asur. So therefore, the Gemara is reconciling the two opinions of the Mishnah. One is the Bili Ezer, and one is the Bili Yeshua. The Gemara says, no, that's not fair. Why? Mimai, who told you that that's the reconciliation? Dilma, maybe. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Eliezer hatam ela de'efshar lefanesa. You know why maybe the Rabbi Eliezer said, in the case of the animals in the well, why you can't take the second animal out? Because you're really not going to lose anything. Because you could throw food in and still sustain it. So therefore he said, why should you have to work for no reason? Why should you have to make unnecessary tirha? But in this case over here, where if you don't take your fruit and bring it down into the skylight, you're going to lose your fruit totally. Maybe he's lenient in that case. You have no proof that Rabbi Eliezer would be strict by the case of the fruit just because he was strict by the animal. Now we go the other way. Or I could say, I'll tell you, you know why Rabbi Yeshua allowed you to bring the second animal up? Because you could do it in a way where it doesn't look like you went against any of the laws of Yom Tov. You're able to cover your action up in a way where you say, I want to slaughter this one. Then you say, no, I changed my mind. I'd rather slaughter the other one. So at least you did it in a way where it's not blatantly transgressing. But here, when the guy's just throwing things down his skylight, it looks explicitly like what? He has no regard for Yom Tov. And therefore, maybe he'll say it's forbidden. So therefore, we don't accept you interpreting the contradiction in the Mishnayot to say it's a Bili Ez and a Bili Yoshua. So we're back to the question. One Mishnah says what? On Yom Tov it's permissible, on Shabbat it's forbidden. And the other Mishnah says it's forbidden on both days. How do you reconcile? Kemara says, Ela mara papa. Lakashya. Ha bet shamay, ha bet hillel. Ditnan, we have a Mishnah. Bet shamay omri, bet shamay says, Ed motzi'in et hakatan ve'et halulav ve'et sefer ha-Torah l'shut ha-Rabim. It's talking about in Yom Tov. Min ha-Torah, it is permissible to carry anything on Yom Tov. Bet Shammai, however, comes along and says that we're only going to allow you to carry things that you have a direct necessity for the day itself. However, we are not going to allow you to carry a katan, a child, or a lulav, let's say on Sukkot, Bet Sefer Torah Nirshut Rabim. Meaning, let's go even further. Bet Shammai saying, not only do you need a tzorech, but it has to be tzorech ochel nefesh. It has to be for the purpose of eating. That's Bet Shammai Shita. The only, but you can't bring it to the synagogue before Yom Tov. He only allows you to carry things related to eating. That's Bet Shammai Shita. Now, Ubet Hillel Matirin. But Bet Hillel comes along and says, no. Once already the Torah allowed you to carry things for eating purposes, they allowed you to carry things even for non-eating purposes. But you need a tzorek sat. It has to be a little purpose, but it is permissible nonetheless. Now, what does the Gemara want with this machloket over here? So the Gemara wants to say, Bet Shammai, that's stringent on Yom Tov. When it comes to carrying, so he's the one that says, what? You can't throw the fruit down the skylight. Bet Hillel, that's lenient by carrying on Yom Tov. He'll say that, what? You can't throw the fruit down the skylight. So the Gemara says, wait, what's the connection? Iman deshamat liu bebet shamai hotza'ah. Listen, when was Bet Shammai mahmir? When it comes to carrying. You know, carrying already is, you know, has its roots from the Torah. Which means the source of carrying comes from the Torah and therefore could be on a something that has biblical source, like the case of carrying on Yom Tov. The Torah only allowed you to carry things of Ochel Nefesh. So therefore, on such an item, Bet Shammai is going to be Mahmir. Tiltul Mishamatnu? But moving fruit, which is only rabbinical, who says Bet Shammai is going to be Mahmir? If he was mahmir by carrying, does that mean he's going to be mahmir by throwing fruit down the skylight? Which means throwing fruit down the skylight is only moving. It's much more lenient. Now, so Gemara comes back and says, "Vitiltul gufe lab mishum hotza'ahi." He says, hold it. Isn't tiltul, meaning moving things, isn't that the whole source of why things become mukseh in the first place? Why do things become mukseh? Let's review Nehemiah's original Gemara. The Pasuk wrote that the people were carrying on Shabbat. That was explicitly written in the Pasuk. So to stave off the carrying on Shabbat, Nehemiah came along and made a lot of gezerot on tiltul on mukseh. Once they can't move anything, so they're not going to come and carry. So therefore, the Gemara wants to come along and say like this. Bet Shammai is mahmir on carrying on Yom Tov. Right? Now, you're telling me, oh, just because he's a ma'amin on carrying, so why should the fruit become, you know, mukseh that he can't throw it down the skylight? So what do you mean? Chotza'ah and tultul are directly connected, which means the whole reason why the rabbis made the gezerah of tiltul, of moving things that are mukseh, because of the issur of carrying. So therefore, if Shammai is ma'amin by carrying on Yom Tov, it'll also be ma'amin that you can't handle these fruit to put them down the skylight. And if Bet Hillel is lenient by carrying on Yom Tov, he'll be lenient because Hotza'ah and Tiltul are directly related. That's the way the Gemara is learning. And therefore, let's review now where we're holding. Comes out at this point, we're saying, we have two Mishnayot. One Mishnah says you can bring the fruit down the hatch. They're non-mukseh, not worried about tircha, bring them down. Who's that Bet Hillel? That's Matir carrying on Yom Tov, and therefore he's lenient in this case as well. The opinion that says you cannot bring the fruit down the hatch, that would be the opinion of Beit Shammai. Now let's go back for a second to answer our original question. We came along and said that if you have a piece of wood, right? And we said you can't put it under your bowl or your pot on Shabbat in order to support it. So we came along and said, why not? Seemingly it's Kli Shemelach Tol Le'eter. So we came along and said, no, we're making a Gezerah of Yom Tov to Shabbat. And just like on Shabbat it is forbidden. Why? Because it's not a Kli Shemelach Tol Le'eter. It's not a Kli at all. So therefore, just like on Shabbat it's forbidden, on Yom Tov it's going to be forbidden as well. Who's the author of that? It must be Beit Shammai, right? Because really Beit Hillel would be lenient to these things. So then we're going back to our original point. The opinion of that is Beit Shammai. Comes the Gemara and continues. Gemara says, the Af Rav, even Rav, Savar La Lehad Rava. He subscribes to Rava's lenient opinion in Mukseh. The Amar Rav. Mar is a shovel. Shelo Yeganiv. If you want to move it in order that it doesn't get stolen, Zeu Tiltul Shelo Letzorech Ve'Asur. That would be considered moving it not for a purpose, and it's Asur. Now let's analyze. A shovel would be a Kli Shemenachto, the Isur. Rava's opinion was, while a Kli Shemelach Tol Yisur is mutar letzor gufo and mekomo, but mehamal letzel, from the sun to the shade, which means to protect it from getting ruined, is forbidden. So stealing, to protect it from stealing, would be also the same category. From the fact that Rav said that you can't move it from the robber so it doesn't get stolen, so the Gemara wants to say that he holds like Rava. So the Gemara says, what's the proof? So Gemara says like this, the only reason why it doesn't let you move the shovel is why? So it doesn't get stolen. But for every other reason it would be permissible. Which means that sort of gufo, to use the shovel for a permissible item, or because it's in the way you need the space, would be permissible. Who's that opinion? That would be the opinion of Rava. Comes the Gemara and says, Eni, we have a contradiction. The Har of Kana ikla leber Rav. One time Rav Kana found himself in the house of Rav. Ve'amar, and he said, Aitu leshuta lekahana litiv ale. He said, bring the trap. Shuta is the trap that they use to trap animals. Bring the trap in order that the kahana, Rav Kana, will be able to sit on it. Right? Which means obviously there was no more benches, no more chairs. So he said, right, bring the trap in order that the rabbi can come sit on it. Now, lav lememra, isn't this imply? The davar shemerach toli yisur letzorech gufo'in, letzorech mekomo lo. Which is, why did he have to be specific and say, bring it so he can sit on it? Implying that the only reason why you can bring this item is because you're using it. which means klishim elakto liisur. Obviously, the trap is a klishim elakto liisur, and he was very specific by saying because he's going to sit on it. That means only the sort of gufo, implying that if you needed the space, it would be forbidden. Now that's Rav saying this. Now if Rav holds like Rava, even sort of should be permissible. So this contradicts Rav's opinion. Again, why did Rav go out of his way to say bring the trap so he could sit on it? Meaning the sort of gufo. What do you mean? Just say bring the trap. It doesn't matter why. But even if you need it for surah mikomo, it should be permissible. So the Gemara says like this. La. You got the story wrong. Ache amar liu. Here's what he said. Shekulu shuta, move the trap. Mekamekahana. So he can sit in that spot. Meaning it seems the trap was in the way. I was going to sit on the floor. So he told, listen, you know, move the trap away, so therefore he can sit. So you see why Klisma told the Yisur Letzorech, Mekomo? Now, Vibay Tema, or a different interpretation. Hata Mechama Letzel Hava. The case over there was the trap was outside in a place where it potentially can get damaged. It was in the sun. If Rav just would have said, bring it inside, the people would have thought, you could bring a klish melachto l'isur mehama letzel. They would have got a misinterpretation. So he had to be more explicit. He had to say, bring the trap inside so he can sit in it. So therefore they would know that it's only permissible because you're using it. But really tzorech mekuma would be permissible as well. But since the case was mehama letzel, it was in the air, it was in the sun, so he had to be a little more explicit. Comes the Gemara and says, Rav Mori bar Rachel. Rav Mori bar Rachel. Hava le hahi besadyuta b'shimsha. He had a certain pillow that was made out of felt that was in the sun. He forgot it outside in the sun on Shabbat. Ata lekame de Rava. Right? So it came to Rava, and Rava is the lenient one in Musa. Amar le, mao le taltolinu. Can I move the pillow? No, a pillow is a klish marton heter. Right? So he tells him, can I move the pillow from the sun inside? Amar le shareh. He says, of course. Klish marton heter, according to Rava, everything is mutar. Gufo mekomo mehamal etzel. So the rabbi tells him, itli aharina. He says, well, I really don't need it because I have another pillow inside. Am I still allowed to take that pillow inside? So he tells him, hazu le'orhin. He says, well, listen, you can still use it on Shabbat. Maybe you can have guests. You know, if you have guests, they need this pillow. Itli name le'orhin. So he says, I have enough pillows for guests. Can I still bring it inside? So the rabbi tells him, Amar le galit adatech de kirabas viralach. He's obviously you're showing me that you must hold like Rava, that holds an eklishim achton leheter, you can't move mehamal etzel. And therefore you keep on pressing me. Well, I'm telling you, you can move it inside, you tell me I don't need it. Which means, according to Rava, it doesn't matter if you don't need it. Mehamal etzel is permissible. But from your questions, I see that obviously you're strict. So what did he tell him? Nikula alma shareh. For everybody, it's permissible to take that pillow from the sun to the shade. Lididach asir. But for you, it's forbidden. And he was trying to tell him, not to dig it into him, but he was saying, listen, obviously you hold like Rabba. If you hold like Rabba, you have to follow that opinion. And the hamad itself is asur. So you're stuck. He says, now the guy doesn't follow Rabba. But you, since you subscribe to it, so you're stuck. Amar Rabbi Abba Amar Rav Chaya bar Asher Amar Rav Machpadot shel milta. Machpadot literally are like brooms that are made out of cloth. Mutar letaltelan b'Shabbat, they are non-mukse. You can move them on Shabbat. Aval shel temara, but brooms that are made out of palm branches, lo, they are going to be mukse. Now, what would be the difference? So the Gemara is going to explain, or that she explains, that the cloth brooms were used for the tables. So you just sweep up the dirt on the tables. However, the palm brooms were used to sweep off the floors. Now, when you sweep off the floors, what you do is you fill the holes of the floor with dirt. And that's good building, that's boneh. And therefore it's klish melachto le'isur, and then when they tell you the items are mukseh. Let's see. Rabbi Elazar omer av shel temara. Rabbi Elazar says, you know what? Even the palm broom is mutar. Now the Gemara says, "Bimay askinan." What are we talking about? Right? If you're telling me that we're saying it's mukse, the palm room, for sorek gufo and sorek mekomo, the Gemara says, Beha le marav shil temara lo? Is Rav going to say that you can't move a klish melachto le isur for sorek gufo and sorek mekomo? Beha Rav kirabas virale. We just proved that Rav holds like Rava. And Rava says what? That a klish melachto le isur is mutar le sorek gufo and le sorek mekomo. So why wouldn't you be able to move these palm brooms? So he says, Ela mehamaletzel. Also, must be we're talking about over here, when it says you can't move them, it means you can't move them from the sun to the shade, like Rava's opinion. Gemara says, Beha lemar bi'il azar afshil temara. How could the bi'il azar then come along and say that even a palm broom is permissible? You tell me that he'd make it permissible to mehamaletzel? We didn't see any opinion that said a klishim l'achdol yisur is permissible mehamaletzel. So what does this braita mean? So the Gemara says, Le'olam mehamaletzel. Really, when it says it's mukseh, according to Tanakama, it means what? You can't move the brooms, mehamaletzel. Ema vechen amar Rabbi Elazar. Instead of saying that Rabbi Elazar argues, he doesn't argue, he agrees. And therefore the braita is saying that a broom that's made out of palms is mukseh. Not before it would be permissible. Mekomo be permissible because klish matol yisur sorek gufo sorek mekomo mutar. What is it mukse? Mehamar lesel vechen amar Rabbi Elazar, and so to Rabbi Elazar concurs, meaning he agrees that it is mutar. The Mishnah continues. Kol hakelim hanitalim beShabbat shivrehem nitalin amahem. The Mishnah says that all vessels that are non-mukseh, meaning they're movable on Shabbat, not only are they movable, but their broken pieces are also movable. Meaning if the keli breaks and now it's shattered into pieces, those broken pieces are also considered non-mukseh. Ubilvad, conditionally, shiyu osin me'en melacha. So long as they have a function, which means they don't need to have the exact function of the original keli, but so long as they are somewhat functional, so they retain their status of non-mukseh. And the Mishnah gives an example. Shivre areva, if you have, let's say, the broken pieces of an areva, areva would be like a bowl. Lechasot bahem et pi ahabit. Although those broken pieces of the areva, you can't use it anymore, let's say, to put food in it, because they're too small, but you could use it to cover a barrel. So even though it's a different function, but since it still has a use for it, so it doesn't lose its status of a keli, and it is considered non-mukseh. Shivrei zechuchit, or let's say broken pieces of glass, lechasot bahem et pi hapach, in order to cover, let's say, a pach would be a small jug. So it went from being a glass dish, let's say, and now the broken pieces ended up becoming a lid or a cover. So even though it's not the exact same function, but since it still has a function, that's what the Mishnah means when it says, me'en melacha, meaning it's like the original melacha, but not identical. So therefore it is still non-mukseh. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda is more stringent. He says, "Bilvad shu osin me'en melachtan," that not only do they have to be functional, but they have to be functional in the same capacity as they were as the original keli. And what is that? Shivre areva. Let's say broken pieces of a bowl. Latzuk letochan mikpa. That they can be used in order to place in them, mikpah would be like porridge. Porridge is thick, just like the dough that used to be placed in this areva that was kneaded. So therefore, it's a similar use. The shel zechuchit, or let's say glass dishes that broke, latzuk letochan shemen, to place oil in them. So we have a very important machloket here between Tana Kama and the Biyuda on the status of broken vessels, where Tana Kama is a little more lenient. They say so long as they have any usage,
So they considered non-mukseh. It was the Biyuda says no. The usage must be similar to the original use of the keli before it was broken. And the Gemara now analyzes. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Machloket shenishperu me'erem Shabbat. The machloket in this Mishnah is talking where the kelim broke on Friday. Demor sabar me'en melachtan in me'en melacha acheret lo. Where Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that only if the broken keli serves the same way as the original, then it's considered non-mukseh. But if it serves in a different capacity, then it will be mukseh. Umor sabar, and the rabbis hold afilu me'en melacha acheret, that even if the broken vessels serve a different melacha as a different melacha, it'll still be considered non-mukseh. But the machloket is only talking where it broke on Friday, before Shabbat. Aval nishperu b'Shabbat. But if the keli broke on Shabbat, divrei hakol mutarin. Everybody's going to say that the broken pieces are non-mukseh. Why? Ho'ilu mukhanin al gabe avihin. Mutar. Which means, since going into the Shabbat, the keli was non-mukseh. It was a keli, it was viable, right? Non-mukseh. Now it broke, those small pieces are considered still as part of the of its father, so to speak. And since its father, the original keli going into Shabbat, was non-mukseh, the breaking, the pieces, do not have a status of mukseh, according to anybody. The only mahloket is if it broke on Friday. However, if it broke on Shabbat, so therefore there is no mahloket. So comes the Gemaran, comes along and says, Motiv Rav Zutrai. Rav Zutrai had a question. From a, actually this is a Mishnah, Masikin Bekelim. It says in the Mishnah that on Yom Tov, you're allowed to use as fuel for a fire, kelim, vessels. You can throw the vessels in the fire to use them as a fuel. Ve'en Masikin B'Shevrei Kelim. But you cannot use broken vessels as fuel. So now the question is, when did these vessels become broken? So the Gemara says, "Dinishberu emat." When did these vessels break? Ilemat dinishberu me'erev Yom Tov. If you tell me they broke from before Yom Tov, etzim be'almaninu. So then they're just regular pieces of wood. Why shouldn't they be worthy to throw into the fire as a fuel? If they broke before Yom Tov, certainly on Yom Tov they should be usable to make a fuel for fire. So therefore, the Gemara says, "Elala be'Yom Tov." Must be that we're talking about where these kelim broke on Yom Tov, Viketani, and still what does it say? Masikin b'kelim, you're only allowed to use a complete vessel. Ve'ed masikin b'shevrei kelim, but you cannot use shevrei kelim, meaning you don't say a sevara that since the keli went into Yom Tov non-mukseh, the broken pieces are considered also non-mukseh, because they're considered, let's say, part of the original keli. Since the original keli was non-mukseh, so it's broken pieces. We don't say that, because you see over here that what? Even though it broke on Yom Tov, those pieces become mukseh and emasikim. So apply that to what we're saying. How could you tell me that the mahloket in our Mishnah between Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda is only when it broke on Erev Shabbat? But if it broke on Shabbat, everybody's going to say that the broken pieces are non-mukseh. Here you see a Mishnah in by Yom Tov that's saying that even if the keli broke on Yom Tov, they are mukseh and you cannot use it as fuel. So the Gemara says, you're right. If you want to interpret the Mishnah, say it like this. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Machloket Shenishperu B'Shabbat. The machloket in our Mishnah is talking where the kelim broke on Shabbat itself. Temor savar mukhanu. Tanakama says, since it went into Shabbat, non-mukseh, and now even though it broke, since it still has a function, even though, let's say, it's not the original function, but it has some function, non-mukseh. Umor savar noladhu. The Biyuda now introduces to us a type of mukseh called nolad, meaning it broke on Shabbat. Now, true, it's functional, but if it's not a similar function as the original keli, now it's as if you created a new keli here on Shabbat. See, originally it was worthy, let's say, to store stuff in it. Now it's worthy only to use as a cover. That's a new keli. That's considered already nolad. Now, the classic case of nolad is the first Mishnah Masechet Betzah, where an egg is hatched on Yom Tov. It wasn't there before Yom Tov. Now it's there on Yom Tov. That's nolad. So he says, this keli was not here. It's a different functioning keli. Therefore, it's going to be
Mukse under the title Nolad. Tanakama is going to say, that's not Nolad, because bottom line, it went into Yom Tov as a Keli, and it's still a Keli, even though the function might have changed, but that is not considered subject to Nolad. Aval, Me'ayarev Shabbat. But if the Keli broke on Friday, everybody will say, since bottom line, it went to Shabbat prepared for that usage. And therefore, since it went into Shabbat prepared, because it was broken already from before, everybody will agree, no matter what the usage of it is, it'll be non-mukseh. So that's really the conclusion of our Mishnah. Just to review, so in our Mishnah, we have a mahloket between Tanakama and Biyuda. The mahloket is only talking about where it broke on Shabbat. Meaning, when it broke on Shabbat, then we have a mahloket. Tanakama says, since it still has a function, it is mutar. And the Biyuda says, no, it's going to be nolad, since it is a new function to the keli. However, it broke on Erev Shabbat, everybody agrees that it is non-mukseh. Comes the Gemara and continues. Tani Hada. We have Tani Hada. We have a statement in a Braita. Masikim bekelim. Ve'en masikin b'shevrei kelim. One statement is that on Yom Tov, you're allowed to use complete vessels, and you can't use broken vessels to fuel a fire. That's one statement. V'tanya idach, we have another braita. Kesem shemasikim bekerim, kmasikim b'shevrei kelim. That just like you can use regular kelim, you can use broken kelim to fuel the fire. V'tanya idach, we have a third braita. En masikim, lo bekerim, v'lo b'shevrei kelim. You can't use not full kelim and not broken, because we have three brighter over here that all saying different things. The first one says shivrei kelim, regular kelim, yeah, broken kelim, no. Second one says you can use both. Third one says you can use neither. How do you reconcile? Harabi Huda, Harabi Shimon, Harabi Nehemiah. Each Tanaic statement follows the opinion of a different Tana. The first Tana that says you can use regular kelim but you can't use broken kelim, that's Rabbi Yehuda that holds of Nolad. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda is actually the author of our Mishnah. That says what? That if it breaks on Yom Tov, now the broken kelim has a different function, that's Nolad, Mukseh, you can't use it. So that's the opinion that will say, well, you can use the full kelim, once it breaks, it's Nolad, Mukseh. The second statement that says you could use a complete keli, and for that matter you can use a broken keli, that'll be Rabbi Shimon, who has a lenient opinion in the laws of Mukseh that does not subscribe to Nolad, and therefore he holds, even though it now has a new capacity, a new purpose, doesn't matter, he doesn't hold of Nolad. The third Mishnah, the Braita, that says you can't use not complete keli nor broken, is Rabbi Nehemiah. We learned of Nehemiah's opinion early on this daf. He says that in the laws of Mukseh, you can only use a keli for its designed purpose, for its primary purpose. Now a keli, its primary purpose is not to use as fuel. Its primary purpose is to use it for eating or to serve from it. So therefore, even though it's a kli shemelachto leheter, even though the keli is a vessel that's primary use is for Heter, Rav Nehemiah is very strict. He was the one that said even a spoon can only be used for eating, and a talet can only be used for wearing. He holds that anything else besides its primary purpose, it's mukseh for that matter. Therefore, kelim, obviously, a person, the primary function of normal kelim is not to fuel in a fire. I mean, why should he use a regular normal kelim to put in the fire? Even though a person might do it, but that's not his primary purpose. Therefore, he says, whether it's regular kelim or whether it's broken kelim, it's asur to use in the fire. So that reconciles the three statements. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Nehemiah. Amar Rav Nachman. Nachman taught, Hane livne, these bricks, the ishtayur mibinyana, that remained from the building. And there was construction, and they finished the construction, there were some bricks that were left over. Share l'tiltolinu. They are permissible to move on Shabbat, they are non-mukseh. Why? They hazu l'mizga alayu.
because they're befitting to sit on them. Mm-hmm. Which means the leftover bricks, they have a function. People are not going to use them anymore, it seems. He was finished with them. These are leftovers. So what could you do with them? You sit on them. So they have a function. So therefore, they are movable. However, shadginu, if let's say the builders, after they finished the construction, they piled up the bricks, mm-hmm. already vaday aksinu, then it's clearly that they don't want to use these bricks for anything else but for more construction. That's why they piled them up in stacks. In the first case, they were just left over. So therefore, the assumption is he's finished building. And what are they going to use it for? Obviously, for sitting on it, for using it for other things. Not mukse. But once they designate them by putting them in a stack, it shows that they took it out of their mind for any other usage. And therefore, they retain the status of mukse. Next case. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Heres ketana. A small piece of pottery. Mutar letaltel behaser. It is permissible to move them in a chaser. Chaser would mean a private courtyard. Now, why? So the rabbi explains, that she explains, since in the courtyard it's very common to find small vessels, therefore this piece of heres has a purpose. It can cover those small vessels that are normally found in a courtyard. You have to remember the courtyard is in front of the houses. So there's always vessels that are in a courtyard. So therefore he says, since this piece of heres has a functionality in the haser, it's non-mukseh in a haser. Aval bekarmelit lo. A karmelit, we said, is a rabbinical domain. It's not an ishuti ahid and it's not an ishuti rabim. It's a rabbinical domain. And the reason why it's mukseh in the karmelit is because since there are no vessels normally found in the Karmelit, therefore this heres really has no purpose if you find it in the Karmelit, and therefore it's going to be mukseh. The Rav Nachman dideh, but Rav Nachman himself, the first statement was Rav Nachman in the name of Shmuel, but Rav Nachman himself says, afilu bekarmelit. Even if you find this heres in the Karmelit, you can move it. It's not mukseh. Why? Because you're right, you might not find vessels lying around in the Karmelit, but you do find spit and saliva in the Karmelit. People spit in the Karmelit. So this piece of heres is worthy to cover up the saliva. However, aval birshut harabim lo. However, not in the birshut harabim. Which means, in the Rishut Rim, they don't want you to move the piece of chard at all. It is going to be mukseh. Ve'Rav Amar, third opinion, afilu b'Rishut Rabim. He comes along and says, once the piece of heres is non-mukseh in a haser, it doesn't matter now where you find it. Whether you find it in the Karmelit or in the Rishut Rim. Bottom line, once we have a purpose for this heres somewhere, so it's non-mukseh everywhere. And the Gemara says, "Va'az derava le'tameh." Rava is following his reasoning. Derava haba ka'azil b'ritka de'mechoza. Rava was once walking in the marketplace of Mechoza. That's the city in Bavel. It vasa'eh mesaneh tina. His shoes became dirty with tar. On Shabbat. So his servant came, shakal haspa, he picked up a piece of pottery, he scraped the tar off the rabbi's shoe. Ramu be rabbanan kala. So the rabbis that saw it, they raised their voice, and they were telling the shamosh of Rava, eh, mukseh, what are you doing? How could you pick up this piece of pottery over here? Amar, so Rava answered back, lo mistaya, it's not enough, de lo gemiri, it's not enough that you don't know the halakha, but migmar name migmere, you also think you want to teach us? It's one thing not to know, but now you even want to teach us the halakha, which is you're going to teach us your mistakes? Ilu behaser havai, if I was in a courtyard, wouldn't this piece of pottery be worthy to cover a keli? And therefore now, even though I'm in a Rishut HaRabim, it doesn't matter. Bottom line, once it has a functionality somewhere, even though now I'm in a Rishut HaRabim, where it's not, let's say, common to have kelim to cover, it doesn't matter. It still now is non-mukseh. So he told the rabbis, you know, you're making a mistake. It's not enough you're making a mistake, but now you're going to preach your mistake to others? You're wrong. Halakha is, it is not mukseh. And that's the way that she says, three lines from the bottom, ledidi lekinuah. For me, it's worthy to clean my shoes. It has a status of a keli in the haser as a cover, therefore it is non-mukseh everywhere. So we learn from this Gemara, in conclusion, that according to Rava, the item gains its status in one domain, and it becomes mutar in all domains.